Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking Guard the Constitution with Air Force vet Sean Meehan. Then we'll talk with Amanda Winters about avoiding trouble. And Army vet Joe Anderson will discuss his platoon in Vietnam and the award he just received. Of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to introduce Air Force vet Sean Meehan. Sean took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, and he clearly meant it, and that oath didn't end when he left the military. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you, Colonel. Good to be with you.
Sean, give us a quick overview of your time in the Air Force. When and why did you join?
Joined in 1986. I was a Civil Air Patrol cadet for 5 years, loved the Air Force, wanted to fly as a pilot. That didn't work out. I enlisted as a fuel specialist. And after my first 4 year enlistment, trained over to be an aircraft loadmaster on C-141s. And I got to throw some of your compadres out there at the paratroopers. And then after a term on the C-141, I turned over to the C-5 Galaxy at Travis, did 9 years there. My very favorite special duty within that was to be a flight safety non-commissioned officer at the wing headquarters to find out and prevent problems with aircraft, and really enjoyed that. And then my last 3 years before I retired, 20 years of service, I was at Mountain Home, Idaho with a special duty. There were only four of us in the whole Air Force as an Air Expeditionary Forces loadmaster to try to work with other users and military units of all the services to get out of town, to get the warfighters to the fight faster and more efficient, and had a great time.
You know, I've read about that final assignment that you had, not about you, but I just knew that there were very few of them out there, but you're the first one I've met. And that's an exciting thing. We should talk about that at some other point. The lead statement in Guard the Constitution website is this statement, and I love it. Guard the Constitution was founded to put the we back in we the people. Elected officials work for us. Let's flip the script to stop asking permission to exercise our rights. Follow us to learn about proven system that makes elected officials follow us, not the mounted taskmasters. Talk to us about Guard the Constitution. What is it? Why is it?
About actually 9 years ago this month, I was in my Douglas County, Nevada Republican Central Committee, and I was challenged to debate on the topic of convention of states. I'm fairly well known, was a member of the executive board, and we've learned that they send their people in to defeat well-known people and gain credibility back then. I did not know about convention of states. I read about it. I think I'm a patriot. I thought, wow, these guys are using the Constitution to save the country. This sounds great. Started reading. Good friend of mine that I trust said, dig a little deeper. I dug deeper and I found deception. I found loads of inaccurate information and I found legitimate dangers. I think partially by God intervening and realizing I still wanted to honor my oath. I missed serving. I was glad I retired, but I missed that atmosphere of serving our country. And so I thought, let's try with this a little bit. Later that year, I got in a debate at a local committee. A lot of people came and I was encouraged to pursue it further. And 9 years from that, then here we are. I just constantly keep finding new information. I've debated. I've been sued by their lobbyists to shut me up. I've helped avoid their bills passing in several states by going to other states and help lobby. And it just kind of led to, I think there's people out there, as you know, Colonel, a lot of them that teach the Constitution, but I think that we don't teach it in an effective way. We live in an attention deficit society. So I've experimented and thought, you know, if I can put a way together to do little nuggets on a recurring basis that our minds can absorb and understand, Justice Scalia quoted a 1923 Supreme Court decision talking about how the Constitution was written for the average man. There are very few parts of it that are complex. Walk people through and then work with a friend of mine that I helped mentor me on Article 5, Robert Brown, to learn about what they called the power of 500, where holding your constitutional voting record of your representatives up to them, being assertive and aggressive, but not belligerent or combative, and persistent, and get there before bills are drafted, instead of having to be upset after. I think combining that with the education and the activism, what I know about internet activity, I think is where we're going to have our successes.
Wow. Well, you certainly, you know, we talked before and I knew that we agreed on some things and I just found out that we agree on some more things. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Sean Meehan about Guard the Constitution. Okay. what is Guard the Constitution? It's obviously an organization, and obviously it's aimed at, as you were just discussing, helping people truly understand what it says and means.
It's been several things over the last couple of years since I started it. Right now, you can look through and there's a hodgepodge of articles I've written and references and things like that about constitutional originalism. And I try to weave through the theme that, much like our founders, is it's very difficult sometimes to know what's right, but we learn how to go check the original sources. But we have to stop asking our taskmasters for permission. We have to together know what's right and act. And in doing that, I've learned from acting through my Republican Party membership over the years of how to work with legislators. And you can't just go in and yell and scream and state your point of view. You have to lobby and you have to learn what do they want to listen to you and to act on what you say. And you can present things and find out what's good for them. And as long as you are honest with credible information and you're working on an honorable goal, I think that's fine. I wish we could go in and say, follow the Constitution, period, dot, and that's everything, but the world doesn't work that way. So where we're headed is a program that I have a patent pending on where people can join, send traffic to what is going to be recurring articles to teach on the Constitution, and then eventually move towards activation, like I talked about earlier. And if they're very active, they're going to be able to earn money doing it. People share on social media successfully every day, and the big ad companies or the tech companies make all the money. You know, like Twitter, that we now have FBI file proof that they suppressed free speech. So if you're sharing and working online, you've got friends and you can refer stuff to them, you can earn revenue every day by sending them to our source. This is going to be interesting for, and I'm not going to reinvent the wheel, Colonel. I'm going to take the sources that are out there, work together with them, vet them, put them together and use proven content, just presented in a different format. And then people are going to be able to bring their friends or organizations into it, generate even more traffic and interest, and earn part of what they earn. To save our country, we shouldn't have to pay people to get excited. But you know what? If sharing a generous amount of revenue that's going to be earned from this with people to get them passionate and interested about what they really want to do anyway, but just don't know how to do, if that's what works, that's exactly where Guard the Constitution's going.
So this is not a charity. This is a business that a business focused on helping our country get back on track. That's amazing. Did I read it right?
Yes, sir. What you might call in the internet world, a content business, just like if you go to the New York Times, Wall Street Journal for a subscription, you're not going to have to pay us anything. I mean, online properties earn money from advertisers, and I'm going to split what we earn with the people that send us the traffic. And I think that's going to be compelling to the people that write the content and the research and the education and want their story out there. They're going to know that we have this protected model. This is where the traffic's going to be. Why wouldn't you put your material in front of those eyeballs?
Yes, sir. Final question. How can people get in touch with you? How do they do that?
They can go to guardtheconstitution.com, guardtheconstitution.com. And when you air this episode this weekend, this is going to be, we're going to have our soft launch. So people will be able to find out how they can join and be ahead of everybody else. And then we're going officially live next week. And you can do info, at guardtheconstitution.com, or there's a form there if you want to communicate with us directly. And be there first, because it's going to be beneficial to the country, us, and yourself if you're one of the early participants.
Awesome. Thank you, Sean, for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform. Thank you for what you're doing for our nation now. This is critical. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, Colonel, for the invitation. God bless you and your listeners. I really appreciate the opportunity.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Now it's time to run hard for a couple of miles. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Troops America has gotten more dangerous. If you're like me, you'll defend yourself and your family with a firearm if necessary. As right as this is, if it happens, experts recommend not talking to police without an attorney present. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield. They are the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage as needed at a very reasonable price. Check uslawshield.com, uslawshield.com, and use the code FRONTLINES. That's one word, FRONTLINES. You'll be glad you did. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. Hey, it's a pleasure to introduce to the show Amanda Winters from Center Shot Gun Range in Door, Michigan. Her team's about to do a workshop on DIRT. That's Dangerous Individual Recognition Training. Nothing like avoiding trouble rather than being confronted by it. I thought this was too good not to share with everyone. And Amanda's an Air Force vet, so we've got to mention that too. Welcome, Amanda.
Hi, Denny. Thank you.
I believe you've got an expert coming in to talk about DIRT with us, right, Amanda?
Yes, Denny. I have Terry Vaughn with us today to introduce his DIRT training. And he is an awesome instructor with years of experience, which you'll get into here in a little bit. And Terry, thank you for coming on today and introducing the training that we will be hosting.
Hey, Terry, I believe you were a Marine, a British Marine, before you moved to the U.S. Am I right?
That's correct. Yes, I served with the Royal Marine Commandos, 91 to 95.
Did you enjoy it?
Bits and pieces of it, certainly. I think most people who serve in the military, it's some of the highest highs and the lowest lows. So I think I'd probably fall into that category.
I agree with you there. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's always good to have a Marine. You know, in the U.S., we call Marines jarheads. I hope you... do you use that term?
No, we use leathernecks.
Okay. Well, same thing. Okay. Terry, talk about DIRT. What's DIRT? Why do we need to know about it?
That stands for Dangerous Individual Recognition Training. Essentially, it is the body language of those that might mean you harm, certainly have nefarious intent, and it gives you the tools necessary to be able to identify them in real time as early as possible. Regardless of how ninja you are and whatever tools you may carry for self-defense, if you don't see the threat coming from far enough away to be able to implement either an escape plan or intercede and stop it, then whatever you have as skills are pretty much useless. So this provides you with the skills you need to identify a threat as far enough away as you can get.
So what you're really talking about is, one, being alert all the time, and two, know what to look for. Did I pick up on that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it covers mindset, strategy, and body language. I'd spend a good amount of time not only covering the body language of individuals when they are up to no good, but also the mindset necessary for you to be alert and tuned in to the highest degree possible. We know that in any given moment, we're going to drift in and out of conscious focus. But the more we're aware of that and the more efficient we are at processing sensory information, the greater the likelihood that you can ping the Muppet in time enough to do something with the information.
That makes sense. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking DIRT with Terry Vaughn. If I know what to look for, yes, I should be somewhat alert all the time. But if I know what I'm looking for, then my semi-alertness can get to full alertness if I see something that doesn't look right. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. That's perfect.
Because, you know, when I'm out with my wife or family or friends or something, I'm enjoying their company, but that doesn't mean that I should have my head under my arm. I need to be alert too. I don't mean when I'm in my front room, but when I'm out in the public outside, even your front lawn, it pays to be alert, right?
Absolutely. The other key here is the more eyeballs you have looking at any given moment, the greater the likelihood that one of you spots the potential problem early enough to do something with it. When we go out, you know, particularly for those of us that think of ourselves as protectors, it's okay to have an ideal of that in our heads for ourselves. But when we're out with the people that we know, like, and trust and love, our family members, if they're looking too, that's just more eyeballs scanning, ready to say, hey, you know, this doesn't feel right. And here's why, and here's where it's coming from. And if you've missed it for whatever reason, because I don't care how alert we are, we're going to miss something at some point. So the more people you have scanning at any given moment, the greater the likelihood that one of you pings the problem sooner rather than later.
You know, that's a good point. One, have this skill yourself, but two, share it with your friends and family. As you just said, the more eyes are looking, the better the odds that if there's something out there, it'll get seen. That makes real sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's interesting because I tested my kids from when they were knee-high to grasshoppers. I put, you know, I'd say, hey, we're walking into this room, where are the exits, all the usual stuff. But I'd also say, okay, give me distinguishing features of the males who are in this environment. Let's say it's a restaurant. And they would have to first give me the numbers of people in there that were male, and then any distinguishing features or anything that caught their eye. I'd also have them identify exits that might not be readily visible. So they're thinking outside the box in terms of how they might egress out of that building. And eventually, because at first, you know, it was a bit of a crapshoot as to what they'd get right. But eventually it got to the point where they were good enough that they'd be testing me when we'd go out, which I thought was absolutely outstanding.
Well, it certainly suggests that you and your family were safer than the average person because you had a game you played that was focused on safety and alertness. That's awesome.
Yeah, it really wasn't. It was quite empowering. We never criticized them if they missed something or didn't pick up on a certain signal or didn't see certain distinguishing features. It was always about empowering them with their skills, not you know, beating them up when they didn't see things. And there were times when they got things wrong, but over a period of time, they got really good at walking through any given environment and identifying the potential higher risk areas from within that environment or higher risk individuals. And it reached a point where it became second nature. And if you can do that so it's not taxing and exhausting and it's empowering, well, then you reach that perfect balance. You go into your environment prepared, not paranoid.
Terry, that's amazing. And that's something that everybody can do because, as you say, it's a little effort to develop the routine. But once it's there, it's there. And you and everybody around you are safer. I really look forward to attending your training. Thank you for what you're sharing.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, mate.
Amanda, when will this event take place and how can interested listeners learn more about joining up?
So the DIRT training will be held on February 4th at 9 a.m. located at the St. Peter's Evangelical Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan. And you can go to centershotgunrange.com right on the homepage. There's a red button. Click here to sign up for DIRT training.
And while obviously this is in West Michigan, if you live anywhere in the United States and you want to listen, you want to come in, I'm sure they're welcome.
Absolutely.
Amanda, thank you for taking time to join us today. And thank you for helping all citizens live safer lives. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll meet another West Pointer, Joe Anderson, who's recently been honored for his efforts in uniform. And he's done a lot since he's gotten out. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or do it on Facebook. It's now my privilege to introduce a fellow West Pointer who, like me, commanded a rifle platoon in Vietnam. Joe Anderson later became an entrepreneur, runs his own businesses. And late last year, he was inducted into the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor. So, welcome to the show, Joe.
Well, thank you very much, Denny. Happy to join you on your show.
Joe, let's start by talking about West Point. Why did you want to go to West Point?
Well, it wasn't actually planned. I had participated in Boys State and Boys Nation in Topeka, Kansas, where I grew up. So I went to Boys State and then got selected to go to Boys Nation. And when I returned from Boys Nation to do my senior year in high school, I received a postcard from West Point saying, congratulations on going to Boys Nation, you 100 young men, two from each state, are the kind of young men we'd like to have consider the military academy. And if you're interested, fill out this postcard and we'll send you some information. I filled out the postcard. They sent me some information. I pursued it, got appointment from my senator in Kansas, and wound up at West Point. So it was totally unplanned, but absolutely the best thing I ever did.
Well, I did want to go, but I think like you, I didn't have anybody in my family that was military. I'm the first one in my direct line to ever wear the uniform. But you never can tell. Whatever the background, you can go there and do well. Okay, you were a rifle platoon leader in Vietnam, and that platoon became famous. It was a movie called The Anderson Platoon. Talk to us about your platoon and what happened.
Sure. I graduated from the academy, and 1 year later, I was in Vietnam as a platoon leader and was involved in search and destroy operations, which all of us tended to do as infantry platoon leaders. Got in a pretty big contact that I came out well. The enemy didn't, fortunately, but that kind of gave me some visibility around the brigade. And so a French crew showed up at the first CAV, wanting to understand what the Americans were doing in Vietnam, because the French had been there in the 50s. Yep. And this gentleman, Pierre Schoendorfer is his name, was leading a crew of three to document the Vietnam experience for the French public. Kind of like our public broadcasting here, he was doing the same for France. And so because of that action that I'd been in, they assigned him to me, which I was not too excited about because I didn't know who they were. And the last thing I thought I wanted was a camera crew following me around and getting me in trouble in Vietnam. Turned out, that was not the case. They were very, very capable, knew what they were doing, had been in a number of high profile and or dangerous circumstances, and made sure that they didn't get us into any trouble. They stayed with me for 6 weeks and filmed everything we did, you know, to going on R&R with my radio operator Reese, and it just turned out to be the first full reflection of the Vietnam War for the American public. He showed it in France first, and did so well, they showed it again 3 weeks later. CBS heard about it, asked him to come to New York and film it in English, narrated in English. He did that, and it was shown on the 4th of July, 1967, in the United States. It took the country by storm. It was shown again 3 weeks later there, because beyond the evening news of 30 seconds, this was probably the first time that Americans had really any in-depth view of what was going on in Vietnam and down on the ground with the soldiers. And so it was shown around the country. One of the movie companies picked it up and put it on their movie circuit. And so that's how it wound up winning an Oscar from the Academy Awards and an Emmy in the same year. And then it was on the movie circuit and on TV. And it's been shown in some 25 countries around the world.
Wow. And all that just because you had a good platoon that did a good job and you were in the right place at the right time. You know, my experience with platoon I commanded in my second tour of company, they were just average soldiers, but they were really good. They were a good team. Does that describe your troops?
That is very much the case. As you can imagine, I was 1 year out of the academy. So when I showed up at the platoon, I'm sure they had plenty of reservations about this newbie showing up. And my platoon leader, my platoon sergeant and my squad leaders all had a lot more military experience and service than I did. But once we got into that big fight in August and we came out of it well, with me calling in artillery, air support. Some of it was in the dark, so I had to keep spooky overhead with flares and so forth. They accepted that I could handle the responsibilities very well. And, you know, from then on, we had a level of rapport and support that kept us pretty safe through the entire time I had the platoon. I lost only one individual during that period as a platoon leader.
You know, that's awesome. And, you know, if you're fortunate enough to inherit some really good sergeants, life gets a lot easier as long as you're smart enough to listen to them. And if you do, you can do a great job. Sounds like that's what you did.
That is absolutely the case. And, you know, when Pierre Scheundorfer came to the United States some 20 years later to do a reunion of the Anderson Platoon, he went around the country and filmed all of those individuals that he could find in their homes. And then he flew them all to Detroit to have a reunion with me. And it was not, you know, soldier to soldier. These were friends who had been through combat together. And we have remained in contact over the years, to include myself and several of them going to Paris some years later and having a reunion with Pierre Scheundorfer and his wife in Paris. So just a lifelong friend.
How much better does it get? This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Joe Anderson. Joe, we don't have a lot of time left. I know you stayed in for a full career, had some other good positions, retired and went to work for General Motors for a while. Then you started your own business. Right now you're running a company called TAG Tag Holdings LLC. What are you doing now?
That is correct. TAG Holdings is a holding company for the businesses that I have acquired over the years. I bought my first company in 1994, and over that period of time, I've actually owned and operated some 15 companies. And so, you know, I guess people would call me a serial entrepreneur. And they have been companies in all kinds of products and technologies, injection molding, precision machining, tire and wheel assembly, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I do is I acquire companies, operate them, help other individuals get into business for themselves with the companies that I've owned and operated, and they've run them for me. And it's about creating opportunities for others as I had that experience after going to the military academy.
Awesome. And you were nominated for the Michigan Hall of Honor, Military and Veteran Hall of Honor. That's only been around 4 or 5 years, and you were nominated as a candidate, and they like to recognize both military service and what you've done after military service. You've done pretty well both ways. That was quite an honor to be there, wasn't it?
It was a very impressive event. I had no idea what it would be like, and so I showed up with my wife, and they had it in a nice auditorium there, and there was a number of other honorees beyond myself, to include another West Pointer, a fellow named Cliff Worthy, who was the class of 53 at the academy. So he's 94 years old now. and he was honored and inducted into the Hall of Honor too. So it was a great honor for me to be there, and it created the opportunity for me, you, and we're now having this interview.
It is. It was a good time. I was there because some other friends of mine were honored too, including Cliff. Joe, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform. And now I'm proud to call you friend.
Same here, at Denny. And I look forward to us staying in touch. And if there are any veterans or anybody that I can support, that's what I'm here for. Let me know. Thank you.
Amen. Troops, if you're a veteran who's having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at PTSDLawyers.com. That's PTSDLawyers.com. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want your Ranger ready, then stand at ease.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S.-only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at PatriotFoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off PatriotFoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Colonel, Linda from Washington State wrote, "Thank you, General Denny Gillum, sir, for your wonderful informative newsletter and your delightful radio show. It is so important and impressive."
Linda, thank you for your kind words and for the promotion to general. That's cool.
You can look forward to that in your next pension check, Colonel.
Yeah, I'll look, but I'll have to look really careful.
And Pete, a Navy vet, was really impressed with the comments of the Army doc, who is upset with the way COVID is being handled. He learned a lot and totally agrees.
Pete, I'm like you. I learned a lot from Dr. John Hughes, and I intend to fully support his effort to get our government acting honestly on this topic. Okay, now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What's the first one?
Well, on 17 January 1781, during the Revolutionary War, relying upon strategic creativity, Brigadier General Daniel Morgan and a mixed Patriot force routed British Lieutenant Colonel Tarleton and a group of Redcoats and Loyalists at the Battle of Cowpens. Morgan took 300 Continental Riflemen and 740 militiamen with the intention of attacking the British backcountry Fort 96. In response, Tarleton, with 1,100 Redcoats and Loyalists, was sent to catch Morgan, lest he instigate a broad-based backcountry Patriot uprising. Morgan prepared for the encounter with Tarleton by backing his men up to a river at Cowpens. As the British attacked, Morgan instructed the militia to skirmish with them, but to leave the front line after firing two rounds. The British mistook the repositioning of the Americans as a rout and ran into an unexpected volley of concentrated rifle fire coupled with a cavalry charge and followed by the return of the militia. Tarleton escaped, but Morgan's troops decimated his army. American rifles scorned by Britain's professional soldiers proved devastatingly effective in this engagement.
You know, the accuracy of the American rifles is one of the big things that made a difference. That was good. And on the 17th of January, 1865, during the Civil War, General Sherman's army was reined in at Savannah, Georgia, as it waited to march to the Carolinas. In the fall of 1864, Sherman's army marched across Georgia and destroyed nearly everything in their path. Sherman reasoned that the war would end sooner if conflict were taken to the civilian South. The Yankees captured the port city of Savannah just before Christmas, and Sherman paused for 3 weeks to rest and resupply his troops. He planned to move into the Carolinas and subject those states to the same brutal treatment that Georgia received. As they were preparing to move, the rains began. Sherman's army didn't move till the end of the month, but they conducted a campaign against South Carolina that was worse than that against Georgia. Sherman wanted to exact revenge on the state that had led the secession and started the war by firing on Fort Sumter.
And on 17 January 1961, in his farewell address to the nation, President Dwight Eisenhower warned the American people to keep a careful eye on what he calls the military-industrial complex that had developed in the post-World War II years. A fiscal conservative, Eisenhower had been concerned about the growing size and cost of the American defense establishment. He expressed those concerns in terms that shocked some of his listeners. Eisenhower began by describing the changing nature of the American defense establishment since World War II. No longer could we afford the emergency improvisation that characterized its preparations for war against Germany and Japan. Instead, the U.S. was compelled to create a permanent armaments industry and a huge military force. He admitted that the Cold War made clearly the imperative need for this development, but he was gravely concerned about the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex. In particular, he asked citizens to guard against the danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific technological elite. Eisenhower's blunt language stunned some of his supporters. They believed that the man who led the country to victory in Europe in World War II and guided the nation through some of the darkest moments of the Cold War was too negative toward this complex that was the backbone of America's defense. Eisenhower warned this new military-industrial complex could weaken or destroy the very institutions and principles it was designed to protect.
And you know something? I think he knew what he was talking about.
I think so too, Colonel.
On 20 January 1981, minutes after Ronald Reagan's inauguration as the 40th President of the United States, the 52 U.S. captives held at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, Iran, were released, ending the 444-day Iran hostage crisis. On the 4th of November 1979, the crisis began when militant Iranian students, outraged that our government had allowed the ousted Shah of Iran to travel to New York for medical treatment, seized the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. The Ayatollah Khomeini, Iran's political and religious leader, took over the hostage situation, refusing all appeals to release the hostages. Hey, note that attacking an embassy is an act of war. However, 2 weeks later, the Ayatollah began to release all non-U.S. captives and all female and minorities, citing those groups as among the people oppressed by our government. The remaining 52 captives remained prisoners. President Jimmy Carter was unable to diplomatically resolve the crisis, and on April 24, 1980, he ordered a disastrous rescue mission in which 8 U.S. military personnel were killed and no hostages rescued. Hey, I was a Mideast war planner then. The plan was done wrong from the beginning. Well, in November 1980, Carter lost the presidential election to Republican Ronald Reagan. Soon after, with the assistance of Algerian intermediaries, successful negotiations began between the U.S. and Iran, and on Inauguration Day, the U.S. freed about $8 billion in frozen Iranian assets, and the hostages were released after 444 days.
And on 16 January 1991, at midnight in Iraq, the U.N. deadline for the Iraqi withdrawal from Kuwait expired, and the Pentagon prepared to commence offensive operations to forcibly eject Iraq from its five-month occupation of its oil-rich neighbor. At 4:30 p.m., the first fighter aircraft were launched from Saudi Arabia and off U.S. and British aircraft carriers in the Persian Gulf on bombing missions over Iraq. Aircraft from the U.S.-led military coalition pounded targets in and around Baghdad as the world watched on in television footage transmitted live via satellite from Baghdad and elsewhere. At 7 p.m., Operation Desert Storm, the codename for the massive U.S.-led offensive against Iraq, was formally announced at the White House.
Yeah, it was. And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And, of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, about 3 a.m., a Pennsylvania homeowner became aware of an intrusion into his residence and dialed 911. While on the phone with the authorities, the 72-year-old homeowner encountered the intruder, who attacked him. During the struggle, the call dropped and the homeowner was injured, but he managed to pull out a firearm and shoot the assailant. After opening fire, the intruder was subdued and the call with authorities reconnected, at which time the homeowner reported the shooting. When police arrived later on the scene, they discovered a 22-year-old intruder who died from his wounds. The homeowner was taken to a local medical center for treatment of wounds sustained during the assault.
Thanks, Colonel. This retired homeowner from the Keystone State did a pretty good job defending himself and his home. But let's go over a few things he could have improved on, and more importantly, what you should do when someone breaks into your home. First, calling 911 was a good idea. It gets the police on their way to the scene. It's like calling the cavalry when you're pinned down on a hill and need reinforcements. When talking with a dispatcher, keep your voice low so the intruder has a tougher time locating you. Second, I like that he had his gun close by, but I would have done it a bit differently. Rather than call 911 first, it's a better idea to get your gun right away. The cell phone notifies police, but they won't arrive on scene for 5 to 30 minutes, depending on your jurisdiction and the time of day. That's just not fast enough. Very seldom do police arrive on scene in time to stop violence. And that's not a slam on the police, because there just aren't enough of them to do the job. It takes 5 seconds or less to unlock your gun from the gun safe. Third, once you have the gun, get behind cover and aim your gun at the entrance. If your bedroom door has a lock, go ahead and lock it. Make them break down the door, leaving signs of forcible entry. That can help you out in court later on, but it also slows the intruder down just a few valuable seconds and leaves no doubt as to the intruder's hostile intent. A bookshelf filled with books does a pretty good job of slowing down a bullet. If you don't have cover, then hide behind the bed. Having a high-lumen flashlight is also a good idea, as it can temporarily blind your attacker and identifies who you're shooting. The last thing you want to do is shoot someone you love. Fourth, once you are safe behind cover and armed, now is the time to call 911. Stay in your bedroom until police arrive. Also, stay on the line with the dispatcher, as she's your comm link between you and the police arriving on the scene. Finally, now is the time to press the horn alarm button on the key fob to your vehicle. Your car will start honking and wake up everyone in the neighborhood. At that point, most sensible criminals will know they've been found out and make a wise escape. But all in all, this Pennsylvania man did a really good job protecting himself and his home, and Front Lines of Freedom salutes his determination and his bravery.
Yes, we do. Our movie for the month is Two Strangers Who Met Five Times. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's a cool movie. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, Congressman and retired Marine General Jack Bergman will join us. Then Army vet and former president of Marriott International will discuss terrorism, and we'll discuss the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase the book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you will not get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. Dismissed.